This weekend, the Oscars are live in Hollywood, but just what do we think will win? Hello and welcome to Talking Stars. I'm your host Darren from Movie Reviews 101, and joining me today is the only person I can find that watches more movies than me a year, and that is Rob from Movie Robs.
Thanks, Darren. Interesting way to describe me.
Well, we always know that we can both hit the three figures with ease within the first couple of months.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure you're already there. I'm knocking on the door.
Wait, you're talking about of movies from 2017, or...?
In general. I think okay. I did hit three figures for 2017's movies, but that did include a lot of screener horrors that didn't have wide releases.
Right, I think I'm at like 102 or 103 for movies from 2017, and that's not including screeners, because I don't really get very many of those.
So, we decided to let Damien and Kira have the weekend off, because, well, let's just say that some of the Oscar movies are a bit harder to watch in England, as they only seem to have one showing a day, if any, a week. And Damien doesn't like Oscar movies that much. Well, actually he does. But we were going to argue about a certain movie again, and we can't keep arguing about that one movie, and we'll get to that later in the show. And I know everybody was coming, listening, hoping to listen to our Red Sparrow show. That will be next week, as we forgot which week the Oscars were getting released on. So without any further ado, what we are going to do is we are going to look at the Best Director, all the acting categories, and Best Picture. We are going to pick who we think will win, who we want to win, and we're just going to add somebody to the list to make it a six-person list, just for a bit of fun. So we're going to start off with Best Director. And the current nominations are Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water, Jordan Peele for Get Out, and Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread. So, Rob, who do you think will win this category this year?
I have a feeling that this is the year for Guillermo del Toro. That's what I think.
I actually agree with you.
Right. I don't think he was the best director this year, but, apparently a lot of other people do.
I think he could get it just solely because he's sort of mastered his trade throughout his films with his fairy tale style. And what we've seen here is almost like the final letter of everything he's been building up to with your Pan's Labyrinth, Devil's Backbone, even the Hellboys to an extent, maybe not Pacific Rim, but I think it just sums up everything he's been working to.
Probably not.
So, well, we both agree on who we think will win, but who would you like to win of these five?
I would love it if Christopher Nolan would actually win. Because I think he's just an amazing director, and every one of his movies is spectacular. And I'm actually surprised that this is the first time that he was ever nominated in this category. I love Dunkirk, and I think it shows a lot of vision to be able to do a film like Dunkirk, and it also shows a lot of guts to make a film like Dunkirk, because the exposition is there, but the dialogue is not. And most people nowadays want to see movies where people are talking and explaining everything to you instead of you actually having to watch it. And Nolan just does an amazing job of creating that kind of film that it's just visually stunning, and it visually tells the story. It doesn't need the characters to tell you what's going on or for them to say things. It's, you know, as the saying goes, actions, not words. And this movie definitely delivers with that, and that's just an amazing idea in this day and age for a director to make a film like that.
That is a good choice. I have to agree, because I think this is something very special, this movie. I think some of his casting choices were very brave as well, because, let's face it, when he got Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, everyone was like, what? and look how many Oscars were won by Heath Ledger's performance. And then going out and buying a pop star that everybody despised to play one of the soldiers, and again with two unknowns on the beach with him, it summed up just what he was telling us with the war sort of story. You didn't need an experienced actor, you didn't want an experienced actor, which Spielberg did with Saving Private Ryan. He went and got A-listers, on the verge of A-listers, may not have made it in the end, listers. And you're right.
Okay, but Matt Damon, no, in his defense, Matt Damon wasn't really a star at that point. When he was chosen for the role, yes, he had already had an Oscar nomination for Good Will Hunting at that point, but he chose him based on what he saw in Courage Under Fire, which most people probably haven't seen that movie, and I loved it.
Tom Hanks was with, if you look at who was in that team, they were people that you could go, I know him from somewhere, and him from somewhere. May not, the three that we had in Dunkirk were complete unknowns from acting. The soldiers as such, but Harry Styles.
Right. Okay, the three soldiers, but Tom Hardy and, Tom Hardy's definitely not one.
Yeah, but they had to be a bit more recognised, because they were classed as higher rankings, I think. But the soldier side of it needed to be unknowns.
Correct.
But I would, just for the horror side of me, I would like Jordan Peele to win it, because he brought us a refreshing horror movie, and it's something a comedian you wouldn't expect him to be able to do. For all his years, I haven't really seen his comedy work. I've seen Keanu, which I did find quite funny. But otherwise, to go into a horror movie that is so unique, and then to be acknowledged by the Academy as something we haven't seen in decades, if not yet, half a century, apart from...
No. The last time that a horror movie was nominated was The Sixth Sense, which was in 1999. So it was 19 years ago. And before that was Silence of the Lambs in 91, before that was Jaws in 75, and then The Exorcist in 73. Those are the five movies that have been nominated for, horror movies have been nominated.
You probably wouldn't call half of them horror movies either, which is...
No.
Jaws is definitely not a horror movie. Silence of the Lambs is kind of a dark crime thriller. And Sixth Sense is a drama. With ghosts.
Drama with ghosts, okay.
I've had people say that. It isn't focused on the scares, it's focused on the personal problems the characters have.
Okay.
But anyway, right. We're not the Sixth Sense.
No.
But here's the fun bit. Who would you have added to this category if there were six nominations?
Well, being that I'm a very big fan, now there's two people that I thought of, I'm a very big fan of Three Billboards, so I think that was a very interesting snub that Martin McDonagh didn't get nominated. So he would, if I were to replace someone, he would be the first one that would be on the list as far as I'm concerned. I personally would probably take out Paul Thomas Anderson, another one that I would very much consider putting there on the list would be, for the Big Sick, Kumail Nanjiani.
Okay, nice pick. He didn't direct the Big Sick, though, did he?
Oh, he didn't? Oops.
I think he wrote it.
Oops. Okay, that's pretty silly of me.
I forgot who directed it. See, I would have gone for... I would agree that... I'm not the biggest fan of Three Billboards. It is surprising that he got nominated for writing and not directing, and all his actors got nominated.
Once again, sorry, let me take that back. So it was Michael Showalter who was nominated for who directed the Big Sick. So you can take that part out. Basically, it's Martin McDonagh.
Okay, well, I'm going to be a bit outside the box. I'm going to go with Patty Jenkins, because DC has sucked for the last 10 to 15 years, apart from Christopher Nolan. And what she brought us was actually one of the best superheroes in one of the most difficult movies that could have been Green Lantern Mark II if it had done wrong. So I just feel like we need some superhero love in this. We could have picked a lot of superhero ones. So I'd like to think outside the box for my pick.
Okay, that's fair.
But moving on then, we'll go to... Which one would you like to tackle first? The actors?
It's up to you.
Well,
your show, you choose.
We're scrolling up the IMDb then. For the Best Supporting Actor category, we have Allison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water, Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, and Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird. Who do you think will win this category?
I think it's going to go to Allison Janney.
I probably agree with that, just from what we've seen already from the award ceremonies. Kind of see, who would you want to win of these four, five?
Truth is, I actually want Allison Janney to win. I think she's a great actress with a lot of range. She can do comedy, she can do drama. I mean, I was always a big fan of The West Wing, and she was amazing on that. And then now she's on the show Mom, and she's doing a great job there, you know, in the comedy aspect. And this movie is both. It's both a comedy and a drama. And she plays that role just really, really well.
Well, for me, this category is honestly a two-horse race, because I didn't even remember anything that Leslie Manville did in The Phantom Thread. I barely remember anything Mary J. Blige did in Mudbound. And I think Octavia Spencer probably should have been nominated last year over this year for Hidden Figures. But never mind. I actually would like to see Laurie Metcalf win it. Solely because both of these two are very difficult mother roles to play. But Allison Janney could go to the extremes with what her character was doing. While Laurie Metcalf was a more realistic mother who had to actually be extreme and deal with her daughter's mistakes throughout the year.
Right, the irony of it is that Allison Janney plays a real person.
I know, it just felt like too much of an extreme. I don't think all of that really happened.
No, of course not.
And that's where it's easier to be more extreme and remembered than be a good mother, what Laurie Metcalf's one was in Lady Bird. I just feel that's my opinion. It's a two-horse race, let's be honest, if it's going to be anything. I can't see the other three. But let's see, who would you have added to this one?
It's funny. I'm going back to the same thing every single time. I think that Holly Hunter in The Big Sick was largely passed over here. I think I don't know if she could have won, but I think she should have at least gotten the nomination. And, I mean, I've seen all five of these movies, and as you said, you know, Leslie Manville and Mary Blige, their roles weren't as memorable. So I would switch one of those out and give it to Holly Hunter. Even though Holly Hunter, as great as she was in The Big Sick, still isn't a better role or performance than Allison Janney or Laurie Metcalf.
Fair enough. I have two opinions on this one. Not against Holly Hunter, but my two I would add is, after seeing Bridesmaids for the first time and seeing Melissa McCarthy get nominated for an Oscar somehow, I think Tiffany Haddish blew Miss Melissa McCarthy out of the water in Girls Trip for outrageous performance. Should have been nominated. But one that I think slightly has been overlooked is Elizabeth Olsen in Wind River. For me, Wind River is a movie that has completely been overlooked by the Oscars. I think it's far quality crime thriller. Should have had a lot more recognition. And I think Elizabeth Olsen works perfectly in that role.
Okay, I agree with that, but I debate whether she would be considered a supporting role, though. Because she was basically the main character.
It's one of those where they would probably shoehorn her into the supporting actress if they didn't think she would win the actor.
Right.
A bit like what The Lion did with Reese Witherspoon.
Correct.
And Fences did with Viola Davis last year. So, I always get into that situation where I never quite know what. We're going to have the same conversation for supporting actor, I think. Don't worry.
I'm sure.
I'm pretty confident I'm going to know which one you're going to pick for supporting actor. But just so we can be clear, we have our nominations as Christopher Plummer for All the Money in the World, the movie that nobody saw but still nominated him for, Richard Jenkins for The Shape of Water, Willem Dafoe for The Florida Project, Sam Rockwell and Woody Harrelson, both for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Who will win?
That's going to Sam Rockwell.
Is your want the same?
I'm sorry? Is the one I'm going to... Who I want to win? Yes and no. Because on the one hand, I think Woody Harrelson's character is a great character also. So I wouldn't mind seeing him win. But overall, Sam Rockwell's character is much more well-rounded. And, you know, he's in the movie a little more. I don't want to go further than say that. And we get to see his character come full circle.
That's where I stand on this. I think Sam Rockwell should be in the actor category, lead actor, because his character has the biggest story arc in that movie. I think his arc is better than Frances McDormand's.
No question about that.
And I would like Woody Harrelson to win it solely because of his work in 2017. Because he was outstanding in War for the Planet of the Apes. And however much Glass Castle completely went under the radar, his performance was fantastic in that as well. And he gave us three wonderful performances just to show how good the guy from Cheers really is as an actor. I just think he deserves some more recognition for this work. I don't know if you've seen those other two. Well, I know you've seen War.
I've seen War. What was the other one that you said?
The Glass Castle.
No, I have not seen that.
So we could go for two from you. But who would you have added to this supporting actor list?
I would actually have added Michael Shannon for Shape of Water. Because I think he was great there.
I would agree, he is probably better than Richard Jenkins. I don't think Jenkins was bad. I just would wanted to see more of what Michael Shannon was doing than what Richard Jenkins was doing.
Correct.
See, I'm going to go more conventional, and I'm going to add Patrick Stewart from Logan, solely because we did not expect to see this performance from Professor X after 20 years of seeing Professor X, to see him so frail, so on death's door throughout the movie. And then, mind you, it was just him swearing just for the sake of being allowed to swear at times. I just think it was so much fun, that performance, and someone of his stature deserves that one moment of recognition over probably someone like Christopher Plummer, who got shoehorned into the role to cover up somebody else's misdemeanors in their personal life, and then thought, well, as the director did something really clever, we'll nominate that actor for an Oscar.
Right.
And neither of us have seen All the Money in the World.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Don't really care too much to see it either.
I'd like to see it, you know, just for the sake of being able to say I've seen it, you know, and see what all the hype is about. I mean, I think I would prefer to see both versions of it, you know, the Kevin Spacey version and the Christopher Plummer version, just to see the difference.
The only thing I would like to see is how much of the movie he's in.
Correct.
I think that's the big one there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is time to get on to the big acting roles. Lead actress, we have Frances McDormand, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, the token Meryl Streep, The Post, Saoirse Ronan, Lady Bird, Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, and Margot Robbie for I, Tonya. I think I know who you want and will win this one.
And how do you know that?
Because I have a feeling that it's going to be another one on a few of your lists today.
Possibly. Yeah, so the truth is I'm a little torn here, because I think both Frances McDormand and Sally Hawkins have amazing performances here. and the fact that Sally Hawkins' performance is completely silent, you know, even adds to the impact of such a type of role. But I do think that Frances McDormand is going to win. Again, when you're dealing with want, I would like Frances McDormand to win, but I also would like Sally Hawkins. So I'd be happy with either one.
See, I'm in the same stage where I think McDormand will win, but I would like Sally Hawkins to win. As I will say quite often in this show, is The Shape of Water, what her character shows of what loneliness is in a crowded place is wonderful. And as you said, playing a mute character works for this movie. You can just sit and watch to see what she's going to do next. With the friends, be it the Octavia Spencer character, the Richard Jenkins character, or against the Michael Shannon's villainous, but even the Michael Stuhlbarg character, they're all interesting scenes to see. And again, this one comes down to who can be the loudest and who can be the more subtle, because Frances McDormand just had to go up, balls out, throw everything at the wall to be a loud character. It's a lot easier to remember a loud character than a quiet character.
No question about that.
So, we kind of agree on this one. It's unusual. What's going on?
It happens every so often. Come on, one out of six.
Well, we kind of agreed on the supporting actor as well.
Correct.
And mm-hmm. and director. What's going on? But who would you have added to this list?
I guess you chose the wrong person to do this with, Darren.
That way we might have had a lot more arguments with Damien.
But okay.
Who would you have added?
I would have added Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game.
I thought you might add that one. I would also like to put forward her performance in Zookeeper's Wife.
I was actually thinking that also when I was doing my research for this. I was thinking, which one is she better in? The Zookeeper's Wife she was great in also. But I think Molly's Game is just a meteor role. Now, Molly's Game wasn't a spectacular film. It was very good. I'm actually somewhat relieved that it didn't get nominated for Best Picture, because it wasn't something that could have been Best Picture, in my opinion. Even though it was such a great script by Aaron Sorkin, who knows how to write really well, and he knows how to write characters really well also, and that's why Jessica Chastain's character just really stands out as such an amazing character. You know, another one to add to Aaron Sorkin's amazing characters over the years.
Yeah. I will pretty agree. I don't think Molly's Game is Oscar worthy. Her performance does carry the movie, but as I have played poker, I got so frustrated watching all the poker scenes, because I didn't need to be spoon-fed how to read a pair. I know it's trying to get people who don't understand poker, and I know I did spend the whole movie going, Michael Cera is playing Tobey Maguire, because I already knew about Tobey Maguire's poker addiction. Even though they didn't officially say it was Tobey Maguire. And I thought it was too long, Molly's Game.
Okay, and I understand that too.
But I would have picked another one outside the box. I'm going to go with Audrey Plaza for Ingrid Goes West. Because Ingrid Goes West is a movie that has another one completely missed any Oscar recognition. And is one of the ones that makes the most sense in the modern world. Because it deals with social media addiction. And this idea of celebrity being someone who can take a photo of themselves and put it on Instagram. And her watching this character, desperation for fame is so interesting to watch from start to finish. It was something I really enjoyed last year. Have you seen Ingrid Goes West?
Nope, I haven't seen that. No, another one to add to my list of things to try and get to watch soon.
You're either going to really like it or really not like it. I don't think you're going to say it was okay, if I'm honest.
Okay. I'll let you know when I find out.
Well, we'll go on to the best actor category. This one seems like it's the easiest one to bet on. But we have Daniel Day-Lewis's retirement performance in Phantom Thread. Denzel Washington in Roman J. Israel-esque, which is the one I haven't seen.
You're not missing anything.
Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Kahula for Get Out, and Gary Oldman for The Darkest Hour. Will this be the shortest part of the show?
Probably.
Are you going for the old man, 1-2?
That I am.
I think there isn't really much of a question in this. Timothy Chalamet's performance probably could have, is the closest to a rival, but could have been done by any young actor, I feel. And it's just,
definitely agreed.
Roman Jezreel, I think, surprised most people for even being on the list.
Yes, especially after having seen it.
Daniel Day-Lewis is on there because he is Daniel Day-Lewis, and if he wins, we riot.
Especially for those of us who have seen the movie.
And Daniel Kahula. It was a nice shout out to give the lead in a horror movie an Oscar nod, especially the fact that he's going to be a supporting character in Black Panther, I believe. It's interesting to see. It's nice that we're going to recognising an acting performance in horror, but it's going to Gary Oldman, let's be honest.
Correct.
Would you have added anybody different to this list?
For sure.
I wonder which actor from The Big Sick you're going to pick.
Ha ha ha, very funny. No, it's not The Big Sick. It's Jake Gyllenhaal for Stronger. Which again, that was a film that itself wasn't amazing, but the performance was. You know, being able to play someone missing legs, he just does an amazing job. And his character arc in that movie is great.
See, I liked Stronger, but I felt it lacked one final punch to deliver his performance home. I don't know, it's because it's such a new story, as such, because it was only, what, is it 5 years ago, the bombings? Give or take?
Something like that, yeah. No, so it was 2013? Could be.
It's difficult to see the full effect of that on that man for his full life, which is something we generally would see in these type of movies.
Right, 2013, so it's a little less than 5 years since it happened. So it was 4 years after they made the movie, you know, after it happened for the movie to come out.
So that's what I mean. There's a lot more of that story to tell still, and I think that's why I think it lacks that moment, because you're only seeing a couple of years. But for me, I'm torn between two people. I'm going to have to put James McAvoy for Split on here.
Oh, I forgot about that one. Yeah, that was great.
Solely because of the amount of characters he has to portray.
Correct, but didn't that come out in 2016?
We don't really
in America.
We don't really have like an official release date, because everybody started reviewing it in January, America,
right,
or England.
No, the question is whether it would have even been eligible this year for the Oscars. That's the question.
I think most people would have put the Oscar ballots in before the official release of Split, so they couldn't have put it forward. And the fact it was just a M. Night Shyamalan horror movie, I don't think they even considered trying to put it in for anything. But if we're going to throw another name forward, then I'll put Jeremy Renner for Wind River, because I think this role proves that he can handle the lead roles in movies to a new extent. We've seen him try with Jason Bourne or Bourne Legacy, kind of missed, and he's great at supporting, but in this film we get to see him struggle through a lot of emotional turmoil, and I just think, again, it's one of the movies that completely got overlooked. But here is the big question. We're on to Best Picture now. So before we count down the top nine, which one would you have added to make this a 10?
I would have actually gone with one of three films, which I know is a little bit of cheating, but I think that what was missing this year was a superhero film, because this year was a year for great superhero films. So I would choose any of the three between Wonder Woman, Logan, or Thor Ragnarok. If I was forced to choose one of them, I mean, I think Thor was the most fun of the three of them. But I think that Wonder Woman is the one of the three that actually might have been able to make the jump to Best Picture.
So if you're picking out of those three, I would disagree. I would say Logan is probably the one that would make the best. So, because it doesn't feel like a comic book movie.
It doesn't feel like a comic book movie, but it's too much of an action movie than they're looking for, than what the Oscars is looking for. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, they always like to say that they made it 10 so they could include superhero movies, but have yet to include anything remotely popcorn based apart from Mad Max Fury Road.
Correct. I mean, I would be very happy if they went back to the 5 Best Picture nominees a year. I think that the idea of expanding it was a good idea because of the fact that The Dark Knight, got passed over that year. But I think it just muddles it a little too much.
Well, I'll copy you then. You put 3 forward. I'm going to put 2 forward. You know, as well as everybody else who reads my site, that I wanted War for the Planet of the Apes to get some more recognition.
I was surprised you didn't have,
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis is your best actor.
I'm still torn between motion capture. While I think he is fantastic, I think the capture team deserve just as much praise as Andy Serkis.
Okay.
But for me, I would have put this on. I think it is better than Return of the King. So if we are putting trilogies on here, this is the best final part of any movie I've seen in a long time.
Okay, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that, but you have the right to your opinion.
Which one was better final part?
No, of course the Lord of the Rings is better, but whatever.
See, I think this one is solely because we've only followed one true character throughout the 3 films. Lord of the Rings is a much bigger picture, but this is seeing what Caesar has had to go through from the start, and in the middle where he's just wanting peace, and he continues to want peace, but in this one, he gets torn between becoming Cobra, his worst enemy, and whether he needs to do what Cobra does to survive, or continue his ways. I know the title's misleading in this movie, but for me, when you're having a character arc, as well as you've done for 3 movies, this is probably the best character arc you've had in a trilogy in a long time. But the other one I would include would be Florida Project. I actually really like the Florida Project. I know it took me a while to figure out when it was set, because I don't know all about the Disney world. I thought it was sort of an older movie to start with, until I saw tablets and iPhones. I was like, actually it's a modern movie. But that movie for me is one of the more interesting and much better than a lot of the Oscar nominated pictures this year. Has great performances from 2 complete unknowns, and Willem Dafoe just sort of turning up and being a nice guy, and it was weird.
Yeah, we're not used to that.
I know. So that's what we would have added. Now we're going to go down from our worst to our best and talk about what we think will be why we think this film should win Best Picture. This doesn't necessarily mean which one we want to win Best Picture. So, what is your number 9?
My number 9 is The Phantom Thread, which shouldn't even be on this list as far as I'm concerned. It was so bad.
I have a snap with you on this film. I was so bored watching this movie.
I was completely bored, and I can't... there was just no story there. Or, if there is a story, it's just really, really boring.
Yes, I agree. I think this has solely been put on there for name and reputation. Paul Thomas Anderson, his last few movies have been misses, left, right and centre, I feel. The Master, and I believe he did Inherent Vice.
I didn't like either of those.
There Will Be Blood is fantastic.
Yes.
Daniel Day-Lewis is fantastic, but this one is just... Oh, come on, do something... for 2 hours.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, well, that was easy. See, I'll go to my number 8 then, because my number 7 and 8 could flip any day of the week, because I think they're basically the same movie. Obviously they're not, but I'm going to put Darkest Hour at number 8. Do you have that higher?
Of course I have much higher.
Okay, my main thing.
Okay,
we'll do your number 8 then.
Hey, wait, what's the other one you would flip?
We'll see, because that would be my 7.
Okay, got it. Okay, so my 8, and you're going to bump it up, obviously, because I think this is probably your favorite movie of the year, is Get Out.
No, that's getting bumped. It's not.
Yeah.
My number 7 is The Post.
Bump.
Okay, your 7?
My number 7 is Call Me By Your Name.
We'll just about bump that one. What's your 6?
My 6th is Darkest Hour.
Okay. Let's see why you put it here.
Okay. Let's put it this way. My top 6 films here are all in my my top 15 movies of 2017, which I hope to finally get up sometime this week, post it. But The Darkest Hour, even though we know the general story, they did a great job of showing the British political system of how it dealt with Chamberlain and how it dealt with Churchill, and they didn't really show us the other side. You don't see the Germans. You see the internal infighting, and I mean these top 6 were very hard for me to place because I love all 6 of these movies, and I just thought that The Darkest Hour was led more by the performance of Gary Oldman, which is an amazing, amazing performance, than the story itself. The story itself felt slightly lacking. I mean, I still give this movie a 9 out of 10, but because I had to compare it with the other nominees, so I would say that it was a great performance with an almost great film.
See, I think the film got overshadowed by his performance, and the fact is we have a very bland version of Churchill with Brian Cox a couple of months ago. I've been watching The Crown with another Churchill, so I've seen so much about Churchill in the last couple of years. I'm just, while the Dunkirk side of the story seems to be the most important thing, the trailer gave away everything, all of the impactful scenes, and it was like, why did you do that?
And that's why I don't watch trailers.
When you're at the cinema, you don't always get a choice. But one of the scenes in the cinema, in the trailer, is the final speech to Parliament about going to get the guys back, and it's sort of like, come on, you. And when you watch it, you're like, that's, you put that in the trailer, and that scene's sort of like the you can't handle the truth scene of this movie. And you've blown it in the trailer. That's why I have it low down, because I saw all of the important scenes in the trailer. So,
okay, I can understand that.
For my number 6, I have Lady Bird.
Okay, I'm going to bump that up.
Okay. Your number 5?
My number 5 is Lady Bird.
Okay. Why is Lady Bird higher for you than for me?
Well, I enjoyed the way that this movie shows us the view of a modern teenage girl. It's a coming of age story for a teenage girl, which it's presented in a really, really interesting way, and gives us so much insight into what type of things this girl is going through as she's trying to make decisions and what she wants to do with her life. And I thought it was done really well, and that's something that's rare in movies lately, where you get the female, the teenage, or the female teenage perspective of things. And they just did a really nice job of that.
See, I have Lady Bird slightly lower, because I've seen these coming-of-age movies. I didn't really connect, because this is one where it's one of these issues that in American movies, they do a lot of this, finish high school 18, but you need to prepare for college the year before, and it's the biggest decision of your life. But in England, that isn't the issue. You finish school at 16, then you may go to a local college. You would never move away for the 16 to 18 years, and then you move away for the 18 onwards. And for this, whenever I see a movie that sets around that quite a lot of the time, I just don't connect to it at all because it's something we never do. And I couldn't understand because she was really an annoying kid as well. She made so many stupid decisions. She ditched her friends.
Kids like to make stupid decisions.
I know. But if I'm going to watch a kid do stupid decisions, I'd rather be watching 13 Reasons Why again than Lady Bird. I found that TV show a lot more interesting. So that's why I have it slightly lower. Because my list is really weird, because number 9 shouldn't be there. 7 and 8 are just historical moment with a lot of talking. 5 and 6 are the same movie again. 4's just there because it's better than the rest. And 1, 2 and 3 are my favourites for you.
Okay.
My number 5 is one we've talked about, is Call Me By Your Name. As I just said, I feel it is pretty much a male version of Lady Bird. I think it looks a lot better, this movie. It has better complete performances from the three main characters. And it's a lot more interesting to see this character try to figure out what he wants from his life and his own sexuality. That's why I put it slightly higher than Lady Bird.
Right. My problem with it is, yes, it has some great scenes. It has some. There's the scene with where the kid with his father, which is also a great scene. But I just had trouble believing this love story, and because this is not just a coming of age movie; it's a love story, and I have a problem with movies that if you watch something and you can't believe that these characters are really supposedly in love, or that there's some sort of, you know, realistic aspect of it. So it's harder for me to enjoy it. And I just didn't feel it here. I mean, Armie Hammer was a fun character to watch, you know, and to see the differences between him and Timothée Chalamet. I mean, it was interesting, but it just didn't grab me strong enough to really care about this love story between the two of them.
Fair enough. Well, what is your number 4 going to be?
My number 4 is The Shape of Water.
We're going to have to bump then.
I'm aware of that.
And I'm pretty sure we're going to bump because my number 4 is 3 Billboards. your number 3?
My number 3 is The Post.
Okay.
I've always been a really big fan of movies that deal with reporters, and especially when you're dealing with real stories. Like, I loved Spotlight 2 years ago. That was one of my favorite movies of the year. And I was so happy when it won Best Picture because it really did deserve it. I'm a big fan of All the President's Men. Movies that take real events and show them from a reporter's perspective always grab me really well, and I tend to like those type of movies. The fact that this movie was made by Spielberg, you know, with the help of with the help of Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks and the rest of the cast. I mean, it was really, really enjoyable to watch it. And I'm kind of tripping, even though I knew what happens in the end. I'm familiar with the story of the Pentagon Papers.
See, I have the other fear because I preferred watching Spotlight. I thought that was a much more interesting study because there was a group of reporters trying to solve or investigate journalism and the story. In this one, it was so much more about can they or won't they, and then we don't see the court case is happening. I think we're too reliant on it being Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep and Spielberg. And when you have those three, you're expecting, I want to say the word, perfection. But you don't get it. You just get a lot of... I think the first hour was way too slow. Nothing really happens in the first hour. And there's a lot more to look into in this movie that I think we skipped over. And I wanted to see something more, and again, it's one of these where as I say with something else that's going to appear on the list, I think the historical moment depends on which country you're from. anybody outside of America or Vietnam probably doesn't really care about the post story, because they were the only real countries that were that involved in that war, and whatever you want, or whatever they did call us in the end. And if you're not, like, from an English perspective, again, it's just the Americans got a bit out of hand and tried to do something they shouldn't have done. And it's one of these war ones that's what I feel with a lot of war movies, where we have a lot of them. It's like, the Americans are going to save the day. And this is what they've done. It's like, oh, they're going to try and clear up their own mess now. And every scene with Richard Nixon was so pointless in this movie that they tried to shoehorn in Nixon trying to cover it up without doing someone being Nixon was annoying as well.
Okay, all right, I can understand that. I mean, one of the things is that, I mean, I actually like the fact that they didn't show the court case, because the whole idea here is to show the reporter's perspective on everything. You know, we're not trying to see a movie about the perspective of the court case itself, because the whole idea of this movie, and from what I understood, is the whole idea of freedom of the press. You know, and which again, as since you're not an American, I mean, I don't know what the laws are in England about freedom of the press or whatever. But you know, even back in 1789, when they you know, created the Bill of Rights in America, and they decided that was one of the things that's most important to them, because apparently there was no freedom of press from the British ruled at the time. My understanding, I could be wrong. So that was one of the reasons why. That's the first thing that they decided to make sure that everyone had. And this movie shows that even 200 years after that idea, you know, so here we have the government trying to suppress information that the press wants to actually get out because of this idea of freedom of the press. And I just like the way that they did it. As you noticed, I didn't mention that Tom Hanks should have been nominated for Best Actor. I mean, I think he's a great actor, and it's been a very long time since he's been nominated for Best Actor, but then again, he hasn't had as many meaty roles as he did years ago. Now, he was more of, even though he was theoretically the lead actor here, his role was more of a supporting role, because in this movie, along with Spotlight and along with All the President's Men, the thing that I see from them is that the main actor is the story itself, and the characters are all supporting that story. And I thought the story was a very strong story, especially with everything that's going on in America right now. You know, they're trying to make a point here about freedom of the press.
See, I understand it's for the freedom of the press, but I think there was a lot more of what they discovered. I would like to learn some more about everything that they were discovering, and we only get, like, a headline. There isn't really any detail to what they've discovered, other than that people could have been involved or have been involved. You know what I mean? I wanted more of the historical side of it, rather than just the battle of the press wanting to publish as well. So that's the other reason, another reason why it's a bit lower down for me.
Okay, I mean, it could also be that because I personally have some information or knowledge of what was happening, you know, what the Pentagon Papers are and all that stuff. So maybe that, you know, I didn't care as much to hear more about it because I already knew about it.
Fair enough.
So that could be part of it also, which again shows somewhat of a flaw in the movie, along with what you said about Molly's Game. You know, like, I'm not a poker player, so I found that interesting that they were explaining to me how the poker's working. But for someone who knows poker, that's a completely different story. So, okay, I can accept that.
I'm going to point out there's going to be another surprise, because we have another film in the same position, I think. Anyway, my number three is Get Out. And for me, to see a horror movie get some recognition is something we've been waiting for years. As we said, The Sixth Sense was the last one that got any Oscar knowledge. And this movie is one that you watch first time and you think, okay, there's something going to happen. And then you watch it a second and a third time, and you're there like, that's an amazing moment. That's an amazing moment, because everything that is said and done means something to what's going to happen in the movie.
And I just have to rewatch it. Is that what you're telling me?
I feel like you can rewatch it to understand little twists that you may not have picked up on first time. There's so little tweaks and wordings that they use without it being like thrown in your face that that's what's going to happen. And it's just such a really clever movie that to have a horror movie that you can rewatch and not be like, jump scare's coming now, jump scare's coming now, oh, that she's going to die. It's so interesting to see. And again, it tackles a subject with the race subject where it isn't thrown in your face racism, but understands that there is that what Chris Rock called polite racism. I think he used at the Oscars last year, where they don't quite understand. It's not aggressive to anyone, but it's sort of there without people knowing about it.
Interesting.
And I know you had this at number 8, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. 8, 9, it was, again, between... No, sorry, 7 or 8. Because for me, this and Call Me By Your Name were somewhat interchangeable also.
Fair enough. Well, let's see if you do have the same number 2 as me.
I don't.
Are you sure?
I say that for a fact. I'm 100% sure because... Because I think you've already mentioned yours.
Fair enough.
My number 2 is 3 Billboards.
Fair enough. I was surprised. I thought that would be your number 1.
No.
Okay. Let's see why you liked 3 Billboards.
I thought that it was a great story that was constantly surprising. Everything that happens, I mean, when you're watching the movie, you have no idea how that you know what the movie's going to get from point A to point B in such a way. And by the end of the movie, everything you thought about all the characters beforehand has completely changed. Because it was just written so well, and the whole story is built up really, really well.
Fair enough. Well, for me,
it reminded me a lot of Fargo.
See, I would probably agree with the Fargo ad, but my problem was, again, it was the trailer. For me, the trailer made this out to be a bit like a sweary version of Mystic River. Because it was seemingly, oh, she wants her daughter's murder solved, and she'll do anything to get it solved, and there's probably going to be a big reveal that it's someone in the city, or the village, or the town. And that's what the trailer sold me on. And I was like, okay, I'm in. And it had nothing to do with that, really.
But that's actually good. That's a good thing, that the trailer... Because earlier you complained about the fact that the trailer tells you everything. So here the trailer tells you nothing. That's even better.
But it also told me a completely different movie that had... Whereas, we're not going to say what happens at the end, but to me the end just felt like, oh, so it was for nothing most of this movie. Like, nothing really happened for me when I watched this movie. I understand that it's doing something outside the box, and it wants to be loud, and it wants to show, like, you can't do everything the way it's you would expect it to be. But everything was just solved, like, thrown to you, like, yeah, there's something missing at the end of this movie for me. That's why I don't have it as high.
Okay, I can hear that.
So, it's just, I've... The thing is, as I said, I think when it comes to my list, I think only the top 4 are probably Oscar-worthy, in my opinion.
Okay.
Well, we have a different 1 and 2 then. So, my number 1 is lower on your list, so we'll do The Shape of Water first.
Okay.
And for me, this movie did something which I have not seen in a movie before, and that isn't a woman having sex with a fish man. It is
that we've seen before.
It is the idea of the loneliness these two characters are feeling. Like, we have our Sally Hawkins character and we have this fish man. The fish man's lonely because he's the only one that we know of his species, or he's been taken out of his world. But Sally Hawkins' character has such a loneliness in everything that she does, and the connection that they both feel together when they finally meet each other is something you only understand in certain moments of love of any sort. I just felt like this is such an original idea. I know it's being done for copywriting issues, but that's a different discussion. And I just could sit there and watch Del Toro paint this portrait of something magical. There's four supporting characters that all help the story so well, and we have such an evil character. We have a guy who's kind of evil but has a heart of gold. We have the friend who does all the talking for her when she can't say anything, and the artist who's also got his own taboos for the era the movie is set in. And I could just sat and watched this movie again and again just for the fantasy feel to it all. And I know you had it a little bit lower down. Didn't you have this at
I had
four?
I had it lower down, yes, I had it at four. Again, I really like the way that they take four, I guess you could say, minorities, or people with or people or species with issues, and they make the story about them. And I thought they did that really well, you know, back in, because it was the 60s, you know, you know, people looked very down, they looked down on women, people of color, and also on gay men. And so to make the, and then the fish man, which obviously, you know, everyone looks down on. So those four people are the ones who are working together to try to break free of the prejudice against them at that time. So I thought it was done really well. Just something didn't grab me about the movie as much as I would have loved it to. Like, I'm a big fan of Pan's Labyrinth. I loved it. And, you know, I felt when the movie was over, I felt I just had watched something very powerful and amazing. And after seeing this, I really enjoyed it. Again, this is another movie I gave a 9 out of 10 to, but there was just something still missing. You know, I couldn't say, wow, this was amazing. And, you know, my number three, The Post, was the same way. It was a 9 out of 10. And then my 1 and 2 are both 10 out of 10s. So it was just missing something slightly. And that is something I can even put my finger on to say what was missing. And that's why, you know, by me it's a number 4.
Fair enough. But
I know it's going to win. We all know it's going to win. There's no question about it at this point.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the bag. I think it's a two-horse race for the best picture. I think it's this and Three Billboards. And with this copywriting issue that's come out, it's kind of left it potentially in the middle of nowhere. But that's a different discussion. Let's get to your number one, because it is my number two.
Correct.
Why is it your number one?
Because Christopher Nolan really knows how to make an amazing, gripping story. And when I look at a best picture, I look at everything. I want to see everything all around is done well. And I think that's what they did in Dunkirk. A few years back, I remember when Gravity was up against 12 Years a Slave. And I was a little disappointed that 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture in the end, because I said to myself that, okay, Gravity was great in so many different aspects, not just story-wise. You know, you had the story, you had the visual effects, you had so many different things that were going on in Gravity. And I felt the same way here, that with Dunkirk, you have so many different aspects of the story that are great. The one thing that is lacking, and we discussed this earlier, is the fact that there's really no lead character who we can really identify with. But that's part of the point here. You know, because, you know, this is a story about thousands and thousands of men who are trapped on a beach. And so they tell us, you know, in a non-linear fashion, you know, three different aspects of that story to give us a better idea as to what really happened on that, you know, during that time. And that's why I thought it was just an amazing film, and it was just put together so well. And, you know, Nolan actually was even willing to keep it short, which all of his movies are well over 2 hours, and this one's the first one that clocks in, I think, at an hour 45 or something like that.
There's also a rumor that he wanted to do it without any vote talking at all, which would have been such an interesting watch, because the sound is definitely... I actually saw this movie twice at the cinema. It's the only film I've seen twice at the cinema in my life.
Really?
And
Yes.
And I went there first time, and you watch those kids walking down the street, because they were pretty much just kids' age, and you're thinking, what's going on? And then that first boom of the gunshot, it tells you what you're going to be feeling for the whole movie, and you just see, like, we're going to meet these five or six characters, they're going to be our lead characters, and he guns five of them down, and we just follow this other guy desperately trying to run. And then he gets to the beach, and you see the scale of this whole thing that's happening. Like, it's such one of the best opening sequences of any movie, without it being, without doing much, really, just walking us through the scenario almost. And then seeing him meet the other guy who's trying to just get some shoes or boots, and they don't talk, they just acknowledge that they're both looking for the same thing, freedom or safety and home. And then to go out of his way to then turn around to make it 1 week on the beach, and 1 day away from the land, and 1 hour away in the Spitfires. And then you see little glimpses of the same thing happening in each storyline from a different perspective. Like when the Spitfire flies over the boat, you're like, that seems weird. And then about 10 minutes later, you see it from the Spitfire's point of view, him flying over the boat after a dogfight. And then it comes to this final one big scene, and you're sat there like, first time you see it, it's so much to take in. And the second time, you're like, every little bit pieces together in this puzzle perfectly. And it's something that's so difficult to achieve. And I personally think it is the British Saving Private Ryan, solely because of the scale of what happens. Like, if you break down Saving Private Ryan, the opening sequence is something that's never going to be repeated on film ever again. But after that, it's a little adventure movie almost. I know there's a bit deeper to what's happening, but the bottom line of it is they're just trying to save this guy, and they've got to go on a mission that they shouldn't be doing. And that's when the characters get developed. And this one doesn't take that time to do that. As we've said, we don't need the characters. We just need the scale of it. I could say that the Spitfire sequence at the end, with when he's out of gas, just flying over the beach, and it almost feels like the helplessness of, there's no chance of saving you when you see this Spitfire with nothing left, just floating over. It's something that's just haunting to see. But I only had it as number two because I could have picked either one of these two, but for me, The Shape of Water, I think, is more of a fantasy original tale, while Dunkirk is, it could be put in the bracket of another war movie that we've taken. I would like to see someone chop up Darkest Hour and Dunkirk into being like a 3-hour movie.
that would be great.
And that's the scale is for me. I think I've seen it 3 times now. I've got it on Blu-ray, so I can watch it again and again. So
right, I've only seen it twice, but I would love to see it again.
And it's one of those, I think, was the perfect cinema experience. Of all of these 8-9 movies, this is the one you should have seen at the cinema, without a doubt.
Correct. I made sure to see this one in the theatre.
So that concludes our Oscar discussion, and we have quite a like a 3-horse race of films we like the most. Let's put it that way. If we had to have a 3 shortlist, we would probably agree to disagree on Shape of Water, 3 Billboards, and Dunkirk as our top 3.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah. So, we'll go see the Oscars now and see if we've predicted right. If we did, we're geniuses. If we're wrong, well, we'll just be like everybody who wanted La La Land to win last year. While I do disagree with what won last year, I wasn't the person that was saying La La Land should have won last year. What did you want to win?
I was not a fan. I was not a fan of Moonlight at all. That was also probably the bottom of my list last year.
It was my bottom of the list last year because we did a show with four people and I got everybody to send me their ranks. So I ranked the points. I gave Moonlight, you had like 9 points for the lowest and one for number one, obviously. And we went through whichever film had the most points. And everybody had like three of the bottom four nobody had seen, like Lion and something else. But which one would you... I'm going to guess you would have picked Hacksaw Ridge.
For me, it's a toss-up between Hacksaw Ridge and Manchester by the Sea. I thought both were spectacular movies. They're so different. I know that most people didn't like Manchester because it was too dramatic, and it wasn't an upbeat movie at all. But I know also that Hacksaw Ridge lose a lot of points because of Mel Gibson. But visually, Hacksaw Ridge was just amazing, amazing. And Manchester was just a great story. I mean, they both were. What would your number one have been last year?
I picked Hidden Figures because I just love. I've seen it 4 or 5 times now. I just can sit and watch it. I could if it's on the TV, and I could just sit and watch to the end. I just love that movie. It reminded me a lot of The Dish with Sam Neill.
Don't think I've ever seen it.
It's sort of set when the moon landing's happening, but they have to go to Australia to get the transmission back to America through a satellite in Australia.
Okay.
It's that sort of quirky comedy, but also has a serious story going on, and Hidden Figures had all of that.
Oh, wow.
I think the pre-performances were fantastic. I loved Kevin Costner's, where he just gets the sledgehammer and knocks down a toilet sign. Such a brilliant scene. And it's one of those where it's a frustrating movie because of the stupidity that people had then for The Divide.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a genius movie to watch and just enjoy. But I guess you didn't enjoy it as quite as much as me.
I liked it. It was in my top half of films from last year. That's for sure.
What did you think I would have picked?
That's a very good question. I actually thought you would have picked Hell or High Water.
No, I hope it was okay.
I didn't love it. That wasn't one of my favorites. But a lot of people have really enjoyed it.
Yes. Well, that concludes all of our Oscar talk. So now we're going to put Rob to the ABC challenge to see whether he can beat Damien's record of 1.5 or take on Kira's record of 7. And as always, the game is simple. I'll give you 3 options. You can pick from one of these. So you can either pick animation, mystery, or your choice of any subject involving film. You can pick Oscar nominated movies, actors, directors, or a genre in films. Completely up to you.
I'm going to go with Oscar nominated films.
Okay. So I will give you the letter, and you can pick actors as well if you want to.
Okay. And it could be from any of the 90 years of Oscar films?
Whenever it ever got nominated for an Oscar, it counts.
Okay.
Okay, if you do get a repeat letter, it has to be a different answer, though.
Okay.
Okay, your time... You have 1 minute, and your time will start when I say...
1 minute for each answer, right?
No, 1 minute to get as many as possible.
Ah, okay. All right.
Your time will start when I tell you the first letter. So, are you ready?
Yes.
Your first letter is P.
Is P?
Yep.
Philadelphia.
R. and you can pass if you want to come back to it.
Okay.
Is that a pass?
No, I said Philadelphia.
No, but you're an R.
Oh, R. I didn't hear the word R. Sorry. R. Reds.
R again.
Return of the Jedi.
T.
Does the word the stand count for that, or it has to be something that starts with a T itself?
Hey, we prefer it. There's just not a word.
Okay, let's pass on the T for now.
U.
U, Unforgiven.
A.
Arrival.
V.
V, ooh. Pass.
A number.
Sixth Sense.
And that's time then. Because we had a little miscommunication, so I gave an extra 10 seconds or such. So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's a good score. That's why I tried to get everyone to get about 6. I won't give any answers away. Because in case it comes up for another player, I don't like to give all the answers away.
Right, okay. Alright, so I missed T and U. Ooh, okay. T and V, sorry.
Yep. T and V. They're a bit more difficult.
Yeah, no, I'm sure if I would have thought... Oh, damn, I just watched something the other day that could have been for a T.
But I suffered the same problem when trying to figure out my ABC Oscar nomination challenge. I did really well until I got to U, and then it was... Now what do I watch?
No, but you can watch Unforgiven.
Yeah, I had a few to watch, but I was to try and watch the ones I've had sat waiting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Or ones I haven't reviewed yet. So I sort of went back to a few that I liked and then just did cinematographers for some of the other letters. But anyway, that should have concluded on my website by then. But we're going to just finish this off with a what you've been watching round. So what is one film you would like to talk about that you've been watching?
As you know, I watch a lot of movies. So pick something that I've watched recently. I mean, right now I'm in the process of finishing up my 90 days of Oscar nominations. This week I'm actually going to finish watching. I have 1.5... films left to finish so that I can say that I've seen every available Oscar nominee, Best Picture Oscar nominee. There's three that are not available at all, and then there's two that I just haven't been able to find copies of. So of the, I think it's around 300 films that have been nominated, actually it's more than 300, there's only going to be 5 that I've never seen, which is a pretty good rate. And then I'm just going to fill up the rest of them with the films that I haven't reviewed yet. So hopefully by the day of Oscars, I'll have reviewed every single one of the Best Picture nominees over the last 90 years, excluding those 5 that I haven't been able to, that I either can't get a copy of or haven't been able to get a copy of.
Very nice. Is there one that stands out as something special?
There's a lot of them that stand out as something special. You're talking about of what I've seen now, of the 90 that I'm watching now. I really enjoyed Watch on the Rhine, which is from 1943, and I also was very pleased with King's Row, which actually was Ronald Reagan. King's Row.
Fair enough.
It was a film with Ronald Reagan. I think it's the only film I've ever seen with Ronald Reagan, and I really enjoy it.
See, I only have to go back to the year 2013 before I haven't seen a Best nomination.
Okay. Well, now I have to go back to 1931. Which one haven't you seen from 2013?
The Beasts of the Southern Wild and Amore.
Beasts of the Southern Wild I've seen twice and I hated it both times. Amore I actually really enjoyed, even though I'm not a fan of foreign language movies. That one I thought was just really well done.
Fair enough. Well, I guess I'll talk about one that I've watched, and I got a chance to go and see Richard Attenborough's A Chorus Line at a special screening recently. And I wasn't sure what I was getting myself into. You know, it's a Broadway movie, sort of about some backup, or the Chorus Line dancers trying out to be part of the new show. And Michael Douglas is the strict director, trying to pick the best of the best. And I wasn't really sure what was going to happen in this movie. And it was actually a quite enjoyable little musical number. I don't know if you've actually seen this one?
No, I've never seen this one.
An 80s movie.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
There we go, there's your new challenge. You can do musicals next year. But it was quite an enjoyable little movie. I think it could, you could have a lot of fun, but it could do with a remake quite easily, especially with the fact that The Greatest Showman done such success at the box office. Just people have loved that movie for so many reasons. So it's one that could probably be the next sort of Greatest Showman type esque musical number. So, but I know you haven't seen The Greatest Showman yet.
Not yet. That's one of the two that I still am waiting to see. That and All About the Money. Or All the Money in the World, sorry.
Yes. Well, that's going to conclude today's show. And I'd like to thank Rob from movierob.wordpress.com.
Thank you very much for having me, Darren. Always a pleasure.
Good to have your expertise on the Oscar shows.
Well, we'll find out in a few weeks how much of an expert I really am. Which I'm probably not, but I'm an expert from the perspective that I like to watch the show, and I also like to be prepared and see all the movies beforehand.
Yes, I would like to be able to do that as well. But so the word "like" is a big issue this year. But anyway, and you can find me at moviesreview101.com. And next week we will be talking about Red Sparrow and our favourite and least favourite Jennifer Lawrence movies. Yay! Looking forward to that one. Let us know which one you think is the best or the worst. And please don't say Hunger Games is the best. Thank you all for listening. And we're classed as both of them. Yeah, I think if Damien was here, there would have been a few more arguments. Have you read and heard his opinions on Dunkirk?